Walking past someone sleeping rough is a not uncommon experience for many of us. We walk past. Maybe we give a little something occasionally. Maybe we wonder why someone isn't helping and question why governments aren't doing more. We go on our way. Well, until about 5 years ago, the numbers of people without a home in Australia were fairly stable. And then they started getting worse, so that in the last couple of years, experts have been warning of alarming increases, especially in our major cities, in the numbers of people without access to the basic need of all humans, shelter. So are we to just resign ourselves to always having a cohort of rough sleepers and the housing insecure? Is this problem actually intractable? And regardless of the answer to that question, are we in this very rich country doing all we can, the best way we can, to prevent and assist where we haven't been able to stop people from dropping into homelessness? And is there one key thing that we can do to give people the best chance to break out of the cycle of homelessness and poverty? Well, tonight we've got two guests for you. Bec Scott is the co-founder and CEO of Melbourne-based social enterprise Street, and Heather Holst is deputy CEO of Launch Housing, which is an independent housing and homelessness organisation. We'll talk to them in a moment, but first let's get a taste of a night on the streets in Sydney with our reporter Sandra Siagian.
It's just after 7:30 p.m. and the Exodus Foundation food van has just pulled out the back of St Mary's Cathedral in Sydney. It's a cold and windy night, but the gloomy weather isn't stopping the city's neediest from lining up for a free hot meal.
Hey, Bill. How are you, mate?
Hey, mate.
Reverend Bill Cruz has been providing these services to the homeless for nearly 10 years.
We can expect anything from, say, 50 people to over 200. And we're here every night, whether it's rain, hail or shine.
Not too much.
You have that one, mate.
You have that one.
Jenny has been homeless in Sydney for 6 years. She's been eating at the Exodus food van ever since.
I've virtually been forced to sleep on the streets, virtually from when I've arrived in Sydney in December 2012. Like, I've slept on the trains to Newcastle most of the time.
Where will you be staying tonight?
Tonight I'll just stay in the city. I've topped up my Opal card today, right, and I can board a train, but I have to be off that train before midnight.
What were you doing before this?
I was in the ADF. I did 11-year service for this country. They canned me, and then I ended up on the street without my pension.
I had a great job. I had a lot of jobs, but the most recent one before that was working at the airport. Yeah, and I left there thinking I could make money punting, you know. And it wasn't on horses, it was on the stock market. I lost it on the stock market. I had a good position, and I got down to $700. You end up in a situation where you can't get back up where you was.
Yeah.
And you say, well, what do? I can sleep in a park bench, it costs me nothing. Or I can rent in a boarding house for $220 a week.
No, there you go. Thank you very much.
What other services would be useful for someone living on the street?
There could be more showers. Laundry is not a drama, but there could be more showers, yeah.
The dental health services have got to pick up, because I'm on a waiting list and I've got to wait 2 years and all my teeth are falling apart.
Maybe employment. I mean, you've got to help yourself before others will help you.
Thank you.
And that's the sounds of a night on the streets in Sydney, thanks to the Exodus Foundation, who helped out with our reporter Sandra Siagian. So our guests tonight, Bec Scott, the founder and CEO of Melbourne-based social enterprise Street, and Heather Holst, deputy CEO of Launch Housing, an independent housing and homelessness organisation. Heather, can I come to you first? A range of experiences there and reasons for being homeless, but can we nail some numbers straight up? The latest figures seem to show over recent years a really sharp rise in homelessness in the cities. Why are we seeing that?
There's a sharp rise, particularly in rough sleeping and people in overcrowded situations, you know, doubled up, tripled up with friends and family. It's purely housing crisis. There's not enough supply of the sort of housing that people with lower incomes can get and keep. And then it becomes a really vicious game, actually, of winners and losers in the housing game. And the people who are going to to lose out there have got some disadvantage in the competition. You know, their health might not be great. They might have lost a job. And when the housing situation is so very tight, then, you know, it's really hard to get back in.
And are we seeing changes in who is becoming homeless?
Not particularly. I mean, the one that's often called out, I suppose, is older women. And that, I think, is fairly shocking to people because a lot of people still think there's an element of personal action in getting yourself homeless. And I think it's very hard to point a finger at a 60-year-old woman who's raised a family, someone's grandma, and say, well, she's done something to deserve this. I think that's quite shocking to people. But it's just a pure effect of not having enough money to pay the rent and facing a prospect of having even less money as they head in towards pension age.
Beck, we've heard from some people that Sandra spoke to in Sydney that they may get into, for example, a boarding house. They have a roof over their head, but they're still in limbo. Why is that the case?
Look, that's absolutely right. And it's worth saying now that that is only a very small part of the picture. So if you're thinking about, you know, for example, the rough sleepers that we see, the visible part of homelessness, that's only 3% overall of homelessness. And those rooming houses or boarding houses are less than 10%. So you've got a really, really large amount of people who are there at and are invisible to us. And it's often those invisible people that we kind of forget about. So what we've got to do is we've got to think about not only decreasing the number of people coming into the situation, so that preventative work, but also have these rapid, fast responses that move people out of homelessness as fast as we can. So the youngest people that we work with is 16. And what we're trying to do is not only kind of work on those personal issues that you might face, whether or not they be mental health or family violence or drug and alcohol, those personal issues that are happening, but we're also getting you trained up in hospitality, getting you work ready, but also making sure that you've got stable and affordable housing.
I mean, it is interesting, a number of people that Sandra spoke to in Sydney did mention this issue of employment. You know, yes, you might get a roof over your head of some sort, but then, you know, do you have the resources and the capacity and the capability to go and face an employer and get a job or even to get training? Beck, how successful is it when you take on somebody who is really struggling deeply and perhaps have mental health issues as well? How successful is it if you offer them training and give them that sort of support?
You know, like you said, you can't pay the rent if you can't get a job. You can't get a job if you can't get training. If you're a young person that might have dropped out of school at year 7 or 8 because family stuff was just getting too great, where do you go? And the other thing, I think, the thing that we haven't spoken about is part of the challenge of homelessness is disconnection. So you're often feeling phenomenally isolated, and we often forget that, you know, when you lose your job, you're not only losing your income, but you're losing connection to people. So a workplace is far more than your income. It's a place to belong.
Yeah. Those are really important points that you just don't perceive if you're not in that situation. But still we seem to need a better response on the actual housing issue as well. Heather, at Launch Housing, you've been doing some interesting work with smaller portable homes. What sort of opportunities does that approach provide?
We came to the conclusion that we needed to create as many new housing options as we could within our power. And just more recently, we've started a project of building small studio-style houses to put on empty land that's held as road reserve, actually.
So that requires the government to say, yes, you can have that land in that interim, yeah?
Yeah. So there's a lot of land like that that is held for a good reason and a good purpose in future, but is vacant in the meanwhile.
I read a figure this morning, actually, that Finland, by employing these sorts of creative strategies, is getting very close to eradicating rough sleeping. I have been wondering if this is an intractable problem, but Finland suggests maybe it's not.
Oh, it isn't, no. And Finland did it as one national piece. And they basically, with a lot of planning, they flicked the switch from a crisis response to a long-term housing first response. Interestingly, New Zealand is just starting to make the same sort of move. It does take national government leadership, which we have to call out we don't have here in Australia at this stage. But if there's national leadership, it can be done.
It sounds like we're talking about options that are perfectly doable. We see models around the world where they're having great success. We need political leadership. There is a housing strategy. The idea is to make the states more accountable via benchmarks, and both sides are poking fingers at each other for failures. Putting the politics aside, though, what are the practical measures that the federal government and state governments could take now to make inroads into homelessness?
There's no getting around the fact that an amount of social housing is required, and that amount is higher than what we've got now, and we need to plan forward for more of it, not just to keep pace, but to actually increase so that people aren't left out like they are now. There is actually no strategy, no one strategy. That would be another thing, to have a national plan that was signed up to. So I think a national plan is very much needed as well.
Bec Scott, Heather Holst, thank you very much for joining PM.
Absolute pleasure.
And we'll go out on some more of the thoughts of some of the voices on the streets in Sydney this week.
Housing, that's probably the number one thing, get everyone off the streets and fit into the community. If they can sort of narrow down or reduce the waiting list, that'd be a big help.
Hypothetically, if someone were to offer you a house in the suburbs, what would that mean to you? How would you react to that?
I could start my life again. You know, it's difficult. Like I said, when you're on the street, you can't do anything. The money alone is costing me too much on rent and electricity. I can't afford to do anything else. You know, and if I was to be offered a place by housing department, community housing, or any of those other foundations, even Exodus, I could actually go back to work.
The voices of some of the people on the streets of Sydney this week, speaking with our reporter Sandra Siagian. And my guests were Heather Holst, who's the Deputy CEO of Launch Housing, and Rebecca Scott, founder of the social enterprise Street. That's STREAT.